Welcome back. You're here with Rob and Dave on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Rob, one of the most frequent questions I think we get from people that are moving into retirement is, when do I take my CPP and OAS, right? Do I take it early? Do I wait to 65 or do I defer it? Now, I suppose to some extent, the answer is, there's some unique factors for each family, but we've got a terrific guest here to help us walk through the math. And I think he's a longtime recurring guest of the show, Fred Vitese. He's the author of Retirement Income for Life. I think Fred's position has changed a little bit on this, but before we get to that, Fred, first of all, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Hey guys. Good to see you.
Fred, Dave is right. We get the question, I would say, daily, and we're talking with clients and individuals, and, you know, I would say it is the main question. And it is a big part of individuals' long-term financial planning as well. So, and they want the correct answer, which makes sense for them. And I know that you recently wrote that article in the Globe Mail about OAS pension payments and whether or not retirees should defer until 70, the max that they can. So should they, and what's your thoughts around that?
Well, let's first of all, dismiss the situation where somebody is already over the OAS clawback limit, so they have all their OAS clawed back anyway because they have too much income. They're receiving between age 65 and 70. Let's say, for example, a doctor is still working. Should he get OAS? Obviously not, because he'll get nothing of that money. So let's forget that situation. Let's look at the more typical situation where someone's got maybe somewhere in the mid five figures in terms of overall income, so that the clawback doesn't really affect them. They need the income that they're going to be getting from OAS and CPP. Should they be doing it? I've always felt that CPP deferral is pretty much a no-brainer, unless you have some reason to think you have a very short lifespan, or alternatively, you just don't have the assets to hold out and actually use other income until age 70, then CPP deferral has always made sense. And that's because the bump you get, the 42% more income or more pension at age 70 versus 65, just makes it so attractive. And in fact, it's more than just 42%. As I've long pointed out, that if salaries go up faster than prices, then it may actually be more like 50% higher at 70 versus 65 in real terms. So that's always made sense. OAS, I've always been ambivalent about, because first of all, the bump isn't 42%, it's only 36%. And so it's less attractive for that reason. In spite of my eloquent, compelling ways, if I haven't been able to persuade anybody to defer CPP until age 70, I figured there was zero chance I was going to persuade anybody to defer OAS until 70, so I just haven't bothered up until now. Then what happened was the world changed a couple of years ago. The big change was, as a result of this pandemic, I think indirectly, government started spending money like crazy around the world, Justin Trudeau no less than anybody else. And now a couple of years later, we're seeing rampant inflation, which maybe should have been obvious at the time, but maybe we had no choice. I don't know. I won't second guess. But the fact is, we do have rampant inflation again. And I had thought inflation was pretty well dead, that we could expect it to be 1 or 2% a year, and it wouldn't be an issue. And so that wouldn't be a reason to be trying to maximize your OAS income. But however, it's up now. We have inflation at 8 or 9%, and maybe it'll go down, but now it's raised the specter that it will rear its ugly head from time to time in the future. And if that's going to be the case, then that's suggesting you ought to be trying to maximize any source of income you've got that is fully inflation protected, which is going to mean CPP and old age security. You should maximize it. Get as much as you can from those sources, because you never know when inflation is going to be rising up again.
Yeah, and maybe just walk through for our viewers and our listeners a little bit about the OAS protection, or sorry, the inflation protection that both OAS and CPP provide.
Yeah, so both CPP and OAS give 100% inflation protection. In the case of CPP, your pension is going to be indexed to inflation on an annual basis. It goes up every January. In the case of old age security, it goes up actually every quarter based upon the change in CPI for the previous quarter. So it's even better than that. So they both have that protection.
And I think, Fred, one of the important points you make in the article also is that the federal government, in this case, the Canadian federal government, is a credible source of inflation protection, right? It's not that you could just accept with everything that says it's inflation protected, it is, but through its taxation powers, that this is actually, you know, this is true inflation protection for both of those benefits. Is that a fair interpretation of your comment?
That is a fair interpretation. There are some nuances. They're a little different between CPP and old age security. In the case of CPP, it's actually more like a target benefit plan than a pure defined benefit plan. So there's always a chance that, you know, the government will say, we can't afford these promises. We have to cut back a little bit. The way we might cut back is maybe pay you a smaller CPP pension, or we'll maybe not give you full indexation. If you think about it, though, if we end up having a funding problem in the CPP, which I think the chances of it are fairly minimal in anyone's lifetime. But let's say we did have a funding problem. What would the government do? Given the the voting clout of seniors, they probably wouldn't be taking it out on the backs of people who are already age 65 or over. They'll still give them their full CPP protection, their full inflation protection, I should say. And what they would probably do is they would change the retirement age for future recipients of old age security. That's one thing they might do. They might actually maybe have increased taxes in order to pay for it. Those are the kind of things they would do with old age security. With CPP, they would probably just raise the CPP contributions, once again, for the active members, and without affecting anybody who's actually retired already. So that's why I'm saying the protection is pretty much ironclad.
Now, I'm going to just take you back to one point you made, because, Rob, a question that we often get asked is from a lot of retirees even now is the CPP, as an example, is it sustainable? Like, there are questions about whether or not this is sustainable. And as an actuary, I'd like you to sort of set the record straight as to where you think the CPP and the payments are for people that are retiring now, today.
I think the kind of pension plan is totally sustainable. And the reason I say that is because at one point in time, 25 years ago, it was still a pay-as-you-go system, which is kind of like a Ponzi scheme. It kind of depends upon new entrants coming in and putting in money into the system so that they can pay the pensions of pensioners. But that's changed now. It's a partially funded plan at this point. And because it's partially funded, they now do 75-year projections. Those 75-year projections take everything into account, that mortality might improve, people will live longer, that unemployment will rise or fall, fertility rates will change. But my point is that it's a very sophisticated kind of projection that they do. And under all those projections, it shows that the system is sustainable. And if the worst comes to worst, and let's say we can't just... that they do have to end up, you know, raising contributions a little bit or cutting benefits. We've seen the experience in Quebec, where they have worse demographics, lower fertility rates, lower immigration, and all that. Where what they've done is they've increased contribution rates and to make it sustainable again. So that's going to be the situation, I think. And yeah, there's a possibility at some point in the future that they might decide they can't actually achieve the kind of investment returns they hope to achieve. And so they're going to have to raise rates a little bit. Cutting benefits, I just don't see that in the cards. It wouldn't make any sense.
Fred, I want to thank you for taking the time, setting the record straight, giving us the straight talk. We always appreciate that and what the math supports. So thanks for joining us again.
It's always great to be on. Thanks, guys.
Been joined by Fred Battese. He's the author of Retirement Income for Life. You can Google that, go to Amazon, get your copy of that book. Fred is has been a strong contributor to the show over the years and some very good advice. Now, Rob, the one thing, there were a couple of caveats that Fred talked about. So, you know, not everybody should defer. There are some conditions, shortened lifespan. Mm-hmm. You need a certain threshold of savings to get you through the period. If you retire at 65, as an example, you got to support yourself to 70 before some of those kick in. That could create a problem, or it could deplete savings from a legacy perspective. So, you know, the rules of thumb, I think, are pretty clear there. Just make sure that you do a proper financial plan for what your family's goals and objectives are to ensure that they all match up. And we're going to talk about that process at our upcoming seminar.
You got it. Join us Tuesday, September 20th, 7 p.m. This will be in person at the Four Point Sheraton Hotel. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
And thanks for tuning in for another edition of More Than Money on 770 CHQR. On behalf of Rob Geary, myself, Dave Popowich, we look forward to chatting with you next week.
David Popowich and Faisal Carmelli are portfolio managers and investment advisors with CIBC Woodgundy in Calgary. The views of David Popowich and Faisal Carmelli do not necessarily reflect those of CIBC World Markets Inc. Clients are advised to seek advice regarding their particular circumstances from their personal tax and legal advisors. If you are currently a CIBC Woodgundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Woodgundy is a division of CIBC World Markets Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada.